Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
It's 5 o'clock on the most listened to sports talk show for your ride home.
What?
It is time for the Falcons Report.
Guns it. Caught. Touchdown Atlanta in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. You shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons Report.
Oh, my heavens.
On Dukes and Bell.
We are Dukes and Bell. Chris is in for Mike today. We're live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, glad you are here listening to Atlanta's number one sports show, Dukes and Bell, and its number one sports station, 92.9 The Game. Guys, if I told you we're a week away from training camp, and Chris and I were just having this conversation about practices and stuff that'll be going on.
Gonna be some long days.
It is. But this is that time of year where no games have been played. No passes have been thrown. No fumbles have been lost. No interceptions have happened.
We're talking about practice, man.
And you should feel very optimistic. But do you? Do you feel optimistic about heading into training camp this particular year? Now, I just want to rewind a little bit. Because the last few years, for Mike and I, the excitement of what we potentially could, or at least thought we might get with Desmond Ridder, had us thinking that we might have a situation here in Atlanta that the Seahawks were able to do with Russell Wilson, which was, hey, you get a third-round pick, he turns into a star, you're able to pay everybody around him, you build your defense, you've got great skill guys, and all of a sudden, guess what? You're a contender. It didn't happen that way.
Not so much.
But I do think that we have drafted well. I do think we have a very good offensive line. I do think we have great skill position players. I do think you have addressed the quarterback position the way you needed to, even though many of you didn't like it, Turtle included.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is you should be optimistic. But are you? Are you?
Well, as the kids like to say, Carl, there's levels to this-ish.
There's levels.
There's levels to it. Optimistic in general? Yes. Absolutely. Is this team better than it was last year? Without question. Is this team under a direction I feel like has a game plan for right now and for the future? Yes, I do. I like the coach, I like the GM, and I like most of everything you just listed in terms of personnel.
Okay.
Now let's take it to the next level. Are you 9-8 optimistic? Are you 10-7 optimistic? Are you 12-5 optimistic?
This is a double-digit win team.
Period.
This is a double-digit win team because of the division we're in. If this team was in the AFC North, I would not be telling you that.
Okay.
Okay? But because of the division we're in, this is a double-digit win team. Turtle, how many games did this team blow last year because of the quarterback play?
Four.
Four games last year. With better quarterback play, get you to what? 10 wins. Last year.
11.
This is a better team. So I am very optimistic. First level, you're absolutely right. But the second level, to your point about wins and where I'm shooting for, there's no doubt in my mind. Guys, the Saints, say what you want. They are not trending in the right direction.
No.
Neither are the Carolina Panthers.
No.
Okay? And so if you said to me, well, this division is going to come down to us and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, let's be real, Atlanta. We had these clowns beat right here in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and you let Baker Mayfield come back and beat you. So I think that if you're not at 10 wins, something went wrong because this team could have done it last year, and we know why they didn't, and there are better this is a better situated team to do it this year.
So what you're saying is, in
essence, what you're saying is,
Carl Dukes, 4-2 at the worst in the division.
No doubt.
At the worst.
No doubt.
That has to be the expectation.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you were to tell me, here's where I'm at too right now. If you were to tell me that Tampa won this division again, which again, I got to give them the benefit of the doubt. They did it the last few years.
Two times.
It doesn't mean that we're still not a double-digit win team and in the playoffs.
Yes.
That
correct.
It doesn't mean that.
Correct.
So.
But that home field.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Especially with, we talked about this yesterday, Carl. This place that we're sitting in right now.
Yes.
Needs to become a true home field advantage again. It has to. And this is the season where it has to start.
Okay.
Because you want high flying. You want Kirk throwing 60-yard bombs down the field. That's going to get you excited.
It is. And the way that you create that, and by the way, if you hear the national anthem, which sounds so much better.
Better than Ingrid.
So much better than Ingrid Andress. But they are practicing that for tonight's match here. Tonight.
Oh, God, word.
Of the free.
I hope she's getting the help she needs.
This one we're hearing now, though, I like. Got some strings
involved.
She hears
rehab is fun.
Like it.
Yeah, I do, too. What's that, Big O?
She hears that rehab is pretty fun, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a great comment. But that's what you hear in the background here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Turtle, here's my point. And you guys can let us know. I want to know, where's your optimism? How optimistic are you right now? We're a week away from starting this thing. And, guys, once we start, I'm telling you, you're going to look up and you're going to be like, what? Football's here. I am very optimistic, but I will say this about the home field advantage thing that you're talking about. You got to give us something to cheer for.
Yeah.
This offense has been abysmal. Oof. The last few years. It has not been exciting. It hasn't had explosive plays. Not enough of them. You've got to give us something to cheer for. This place is clamoring. We're here on Sundays. To have that kind of excitement where you go, man, I can't wait to get down there. We're clamoring for it. So I'm hoping that they give us that, but it just doesn't happen. You got to earn it. Matt Ryan said this. Did you guys hear Matt Ryan in that speech he gave to the team when they told him he was going into the rafters here?
Great speech.
It was unbelievable. And Matt said, listen, let me tell you about Atlanta. You got to earn it. But when you earn it, we are all in. And that is what has to happen this year with this place here in Mercedes.
Let me give you some numbers, Carl. Numbers, as we like to say on the show.
Look at the numbers.
Last year, do you know where they finished in points per game? There are 32 teams in the NFL.
Were they 20th?
They were 26th.
Okay.
With 18.9 points per game.
Not even 20 a game.
That is abysmal.
It is.
The year before that, a tick over 20 at 21. Just still not good.
No, it's not. You got to be scoring 24.
And the year before that, 17 points a game. You average that out over the last 3 years, it's like 17.8 points per game.
And that's why we are where we are. That's why we've been where we've been. Guys, this is an offensive league. This is why I'm so juiced up about Zach Robinson, the addition of Kirk Cousins, the fact that we have, if we need it, a guy that can step in, God forbid, if something happens with Kirk and Penix. But this is why I'm excited about this scheme and the idea that we're going to be able to put more points on the board. I really thought that Arthur Smith was going to be able to do this. The thing we didn't know in that equation was dude couldn't play.
No.
It's just that simple.
Nope.
Dude couldn't play. And he's a nice guy, and I wish him nothing but the best in Arizona, but he was not what we expected, and it set us back. So we don't have to worry about that. We don't have that issue moving forward. I remember going on a show, Turtle, and a guy asked me, he said, this was right before we made the move to get Cousins. And he said, oh, well, so they're going to, you know, they're gonna bring Desmond back and have him start. And I said, you can't. This place will riot in here if you brought him back. And they didn't have a choice. But we don't have to worry about that now. 404-726-0929. You guys can hit us up. Follow us on social media as well. The optimism level is interesting because a lot of guys are saying, hey, Dukes, do you feel, you know, did you feel this way? Yeah, I thought the offense would be better with Desmond Ridder. There were so many unknowns, which is why Mike and I said, and we continue to go back to this, he didn't play enough in the preseason to give us a real sample of what this might look like. And then when – I don't want to use that reference. I was about to say when things were flying around. I don't want to use that reference. When the live action happened, right, he wasn't ready. And so that is the difference. I know I have a guy that's going to be ready when the live action happens.
He also didn't get better. That was the other problem, too.
Correct.
He regressed, as a matter of fact, as if the moment was too big for him, which I think it ultimately, unfortunately, just was. And one thing we know about Kirk Cousins, playoffs aside, in the regular season,
Dude just balls.
Oh, no doubt. Guys, he was – the eight games he played
– MVP?
He was the MVP last year. The eight games he played, he was the MVP. So, I mean, if he doesn't go down, I don't know what those numbers look like, but if you project him out, Kirk Cousins had an incredible – would have had an incredible year last year for Minnesota, and I don't expect anything less this season with our Atlanta Falcons. Coming up, we're going to talk about what went down at SEC Media Days, including Steve Sarkisian. He and the Texas Longhorns are coming in to the SEC. Nick Saban said yesterday he thinks Georgia and Texas are going to be playing right here in this building come early December for the SEC championship game.
And then Kalen DeBoer said, you're so right, Nick. We're not even going to be a factor in this thing. You're so right.
Oh, wait till you hear what these guys had to say today. SEC Media Day is continuing. It's day three. It's coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. Yeah.
The strong arm story of the day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
What's going on at SEC Media Days? We will tell you. We're live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, guys, and today is day three of SEC Media Days. We heard from Kirby yesterday, and Chris and I spent a lot of time on it as he's in for Mike today. Tomorrow, by the way, Sam Pittman. Arkansas.
Interested to hear what he has to say.
Me too.
His butt could be on the hot seat pretty quick.
Mike Elko, the new head coach at Texas A&M. Hugh Freeze at Auburn. And that, then
that one should be a trip.
And then Mark Stoops at Kentucky, which is wrapping things up there in Dallas. So today, the guys we were curious in and certainly wanting to hear from was Alabama head coach Kalen DeBoer. And we will let you hear what he said and how much he loved on Nick Saban today, which I get. You said he's endearing himself to the Alabama fans. That's what you believe?
He took the safe route, Carl. He could have done one of two things. He could have done what he did today, came out, stayed within his guns, you know, didn't try to be boisterous to the point like a Dabo Swinney.
Yeah.
Which, fine, if that's not who you are. Someone made the reference to Kalen DeBoering before, which I guess the national media isn't as used to.
Yeah.
Or he could have stood up, and he could have represented his program in a way that made him the alpha of Alabama, like Nick Saban's been for 20 years, Carl. He could have come up there and said, it is my goal to not only continue the Alabama brand, but further it.
That's the thing.
Could have been That's my responsibility to take Jalen Milroe from a Heisman Trophy finalist to a Heisman Trophy winner and national champion. He didn't do it.
No, he didn't do that. But before we get to that, one of the teams that a lot of people are talking about around the country is Texas. They were in the college football playoff last year. As a matter of fact, speaking of losing to Washington, they lost to Kalen DeBoer. And Sark was talking about Quinn Ewers. Some people believe he's the best quarterback in the country, and he may win the Heisman. Sark answered that question today at SEC Media Days.
You know, I think Quinn's probably like the coolest guy in the room. You know, he doesn't get caught up in what a Heisman. If you asked him, would he even know? You know, he's just not caught up in that stuff. When Quinn gets free time, he's going to go hunt or he's going to go fish. You know, when he's here, he's going to work. You know, and he's just working on his craft. He's being with his teammates. And so even in game, when you think about Quinn, when he shows those moments of emotion, right, on a great throw, it's almost like shocking to people, because even when the bad moments occur, he stays so calm and so cool in the moment that with the hype, I just don't think we have to worry too much about that. You know, he's more focused on trying to win a championship.
I agree. And one of the reasons he came back was obviously to increase his draft status in the NFL spring draft, but also because he was chasing what Sark just talked about. He is even keel, and it's why I think he's a good quarterback. But their quarterback room is loaded, right? They got Arch Manning in the wings. They are really talented. Sark also talked about competing every week in the SEC, and he's very familiar with that.
Well, it's critical. This is an elite conference, and it's going to take week in and week out work ethic, preparation, innovation, toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness, perseverance, mental fortitude if you get knocked down to get back up. Like, it's going to take all the stuff we went through the last 3 years and put it in 1 year, because that's what this conference challenges you on. You're playing at an elite level week in and week out. And I think that's what those 3 years have to roll into this year.
3 years of getting to a point where you feel like we can compete with anybody on the national level, as far as going in Alabama last year and winning that game, just showing the rest of the country where I think Texas is at. It's Dukes and Bell at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's hear from Kalen DeBoer, the Alabama head coach who spoke today at SEC Media Days. And, well, one of the things we now know is he knows Nick Saban.
Yeah, you know, I get it. I totally get it. Understand, I mean, there's only one Coach Saban. There will only ever be one Coach Saban. And, you know, this program is special, and I guess I just take it as a great honor to be the one that gets to do everything we can to carry on the great tradition. So much blood, sweat, and tears, whether it's the players and the alumni that have been in this program, or coaches, and obviously referring to Coach Saban, so much is put into this place. We all have alma maters, right? We all have places that we have great pride in, and you always want that to be home, and we always want to make those people proud of their alma mater and the work that's been put in to set this program up for success. But for me personally, it was just more about just understanding that, you know, coaching football is coaching football to some aspect, and you got to try to simplify it down as difficult and complicated as you can make it.
Okay. Again, that part of it, saying, hey, I know how difficult this is to replace Nick Saban. Nick Saban, I love Nick Saban. You love Nick Saban. I know Nick Saban. Saban knows Saban. That's kind of what I got from Kalen DeBoer. A lot of people today, if you're just tuning in, just joining us, have been upset necessarily with me because they feel like I'm, you know, again, for some reason, hating on Alabama.
Carl, you're hating on Alabama.
And I'm not. This is simply me saying to you, I wanted to be inspired by Kalen DeBoer today. I wanted to hear him come in to Turtle's Point and just inspire and feel like, hey, I've got this.
Oh,
I know
man.
What I'm
I know
I'm taking over. I know what the circumstances are. And the thing that bugged me today, and I read this quote from him, where he basically said, you know, and you heard it at the end of that soundbite, or maybe earlier today, where he just basically says, you know, coaching is coaching. No, it's not. It's why these are the premier jobs in college football. If coaching was coaching, then anybody could do it.
Yeah, go coach at UTEP.
That is not true. So I get it. You've had great success in Washington, but with all due respect, that ain't Alabama. And the pressures that come with Alabama and the passion that comes with being there, just like being at Georgia or Florida or any of these other SEC schools, it's just different. So I don't buy into that whole thing. Can he coach? Yes. Everybody that I've talked to in the coaching field says Kalen DeBoer absolutely can coach. But this is a different animal. And so he's got to show us that he can handle all of this. Let me hear Billy Napier. Speaking of handling things, does he last the full season? Because today when asked on whether or not Florida was on schedule, his comment was sort of kinda. Listen to this.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, change doesn't happen overnight. I think ultimately we kind of, timing is everything, right? I think when we took the job, what we inherited, the work that needed to be done, I think we're on schedule to some degree. You know, I mean, should we have won a couple of games down the stretch? Would I have liked to close some of those games out in the fourth quarter? Absolutely. But the reality is, I think from a system standpoint, process standpoint, in-house, the culture, I think we've made tremendous progress. And I think this offseason in particular, after observing things for 2 years, we've made some changes that I think have really made a difference.
It just sounds like, Carl, he gave that quote from a dentist chair. I mean, see, like, it just sounds so deflated, defeated, just flatline. There was no passion, no energy. If I'm a guy that's fighting for his job and potentially fighting for his college football life, that's the response you're going to give?
Right.
Like, if that's how you're responding at a critical moment, how can you possibly say that this guy is fit to run a powerhouse program in college, in the best conference in college football? We're kind of almost there, I think. We got a quarterback in his sixth season, our best offensive players at our rival. So, you know,
yeah,
things are going okay.
I don't know. I just feel like, again, Napier is in a really interesting situation because he's got the lawsuit stuff lingering. There are question marks about his team. His quarterback, Graham Mertz, was basically like, this is all chatter. And you mentioned this. Kids are like, what, 18 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was like, oh, this is all chatter. We don't worry about all this stuff. It's not. I think where there's smoke, there's fire, and I already do think that there's a lot of smoke around Billy Napier until we see what this team's going to look like. But ask Florida fans. If you don't believe me, ask Florida fans don't even believe right now. They're like, I'm not sure about what's going to happen with Billy Napier. It's Dukes and Bell at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Our buddy is going to join us coming up, Jason Longshore, to talk about what's happening with Atlanta United. Tonight they got a big match, NYCFC, and he will talk about what the future may hold with all of the guys that they're trying to replace.
Got a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, but you got to spend it the right way. Jason Longshore is set to join us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Tonight, it's Atlanta United versus New York City.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is Dukes and Bell. Chris in for Mike today. Glad to have you listening. We're down here live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Our buddy Jason Longshore, analyst for Atlanta United, joining us here as we overlook the pitch, and good to see you, Jason, as always.
Wait.
What's up, man?
Whoa, what?
You didn't say long shoe on the Twitter.
Oh, my
bad. Come on, Carl. You got to deliver your line.
My bad. I forgot. I'm sorry.
Carl.
Yes, it is Jason. It is long shoe, at long shoe on the Twitter. Hey, first and foremost, man, we were talking about this before we get into the details of not only tonight, but the team. I said this because I've known Jason a long time. I was like, bro, you're a little winded, man. And you were like, yeah, this schedule, right? Let's talk about this.
I mean, I was going through it with some of the other guys on soccer down here this morning. This team in the last 3 weeks to a month has had like three normal practice sessions. So I can't even imagine like the player side of it, what they're dealing with all of the work that they put in. Just for Mike and I, just the travel and the amount of games that we've been doing lately, throw in, you know, doing Copa America and covering that and doing Atlanta Soccer Tonight shows. I don't even know what a normal week's like anymore.
It's a lot.
It's all over the map, and it hasn't even just been a lot of work. It's been the travel to Utah. It's been the travel to St. Louis. It's been the travel to Montreal. It's been the travel to Foxborough, which might not seem like a long trip, but you got to fly into Boston or Providence and then be on a bus for an hour. Like, it's been a lot. So, yeah, I'm a little winded.
I get it. And I think Atlanta United fans and 17s are a little winded with how things have gone so far.
Yeah.
I said to you when you walked up, I said, I just hope we can turn things around. And your response to me was, which gets us into what they may do, we got to get some players.
Yeah.
How do we fill the void? What do you think happens? And where are we at right now?
I mean, you're missing a 10 and a 9 right now. And those are, from an attacking perspective, your two most important guys. And you're missing those. So you've got to go out and get talented players in those two positions. I do want to give Daniel Rios a ton of credit. And Jamal Traoré, but Rios has played a lot more lately.
Okay.
Rios has overproduced for being the third forward in the door that you brought in after the season had already started due to other injuries. Guys scoring goals and guys also creating goals. Full credit to Daniel Rios. Full credit to Traoré. Hopefully you don't have to have a sneaky goal at the end to get something out of tonight. But he's found ways to contribute. Where you're really missing things right now is that playmaker. Because you can look at the quality of chances that has dropped off after Thiago Almada's transfer. And look, you don't have another Thiago Almada on your roster. Nobody has a second world-class player in a case that you break glass in case of emergency. You just don't have that. So you've got to upgrade in that position right now because you're missing those kinds of chances being created. You got to find other ways. You got to find a scheme that works. You got to find some tactics that work. I think they've hit on a few different things. For me, it's about the pressure in the attacking half when you don't have the ball. Turn them over. That kind of high press, not in the Red Bulls Philadelphia sense where you don't want the ball. Right. This team wants the ball. But when you lose it, if you build up your attacks properly and, you know, the three of us are passing the ball together and then it turns over, well, there's going to be one guy on the opponent and there's three of us to try to win it back. Those are the moments in this run of games that has been difficult where I think Atlanta's looked good and they've created opportunities. You turn it over, that happens. Win the ball back immediately and then go. And I think they can do that. And I think tonight, against an opponent, that they can do that against.
There's been a compounding issue, Jason, unfortunately, is that in between trying to find the new DPs to come in, there's been a couple of lopsided results. And with that comes more and more pressure, as you're just describing how to get the offense back online, on the defense. So what can you do on the defensive side in order to try to mitigate those lopsided results?
Well, it's been one lopsided result, the RSL game. And it was three dead ball goals that you give up, three set-piece goals that you can't give up. That, if you want an immediate thing, don't give those up. Because that game is much more – you take those away, it's 2-2. You look at that first half, and I think it's one of the best first halves that the team's played under Rob Valentino. It was a really good first half. Even with conceding in the first minute, you came back and you controlled the play. You dictated the way that the game went because you were very hard to play through down the middle. So you can't give up – I don't want to say a dead ball goal is a cheap goal or a set-piece goal is a cheap goal, but you can't give up those moments. You can't give up those kinds of goals. In the run of play, they've been pretty good. The problem is right now, because your offensive output is not where it needs to be, you have to be not just pretty good. You have to be basically perfect at times. And they've – I don't think that's fair to ask. I think the ask needs to be the other side. Control the ball more, play in the attacking half more, and whether you're on the ball or you're disrupting the other team's buildup and forcing them to give it up, that's where you need to have the game played. It can't be like the first half in Montreal where they pinned you in. I don't think Atlanta wanted to sit back in that game. Montreal, really clever things tactically. They got a lot of numbers forward. They pinned Atlanta in, and Atlanta couldn't play out of it.
Jason Longshore joining us here live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium as we get ready. Pregame tonight, 6:30. Abe and Garrett will have that for you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, of course, Jason along with Mike Conte will have the call. As we talk about tonight, what's the strategy? What do you do tonight against NYCFC?
Well, there's a couple questions to it. I mean, one, NYC is a very good defensive team, so your chances are probably going to be a little bit at a premium. But two, you're missing Steon Gregerson, and you're missing Noah Cobb because he's away with the USU-20s. So you start to look at that center-back depth chart, and you have Luis Abram, you have Derek Williams, you have Efrain Morales, and that's it. You have Matt Edwards, who is a bit of a utility defender. He can play as a fullback, he can play as a wingback, he can play as a centerback, but he hasn't played as a centerback in this building for the first team yet.
Okay.
He's got first-team minutes in the Open Cup. He's got second-team minutes at centerback, not at the first-team level. So that's a big ask if he's your only centerback on the bench. We've seen them play three center backs lately. Do they go back to a line of four just because you want to have one extra guy on the bench? If you do that, then you're looking at your central midfield room where you've got four guys, and Dax McCarty, Jay Fortune, Bartosz Szlich, Tristan Muyamba, maybe that's where you've got depth. Three of them, two center backs, you've got your stable base to build around. And I think you have to get that part first, whichever one you feel the most stable with. Three center backs or two, three central midfielders or two. Nail that down. Second, you've got to take more half chances. I think the thing that's difficult when you're not creating a lot of chances, sometimes you look for the perfect chance. You know, if you know you're only going to create 10 instead of 20, let's just throw round numbers at it. You were creating 20 before, now you're going to create 10. You don't want to waste those 10. You feel like if you create 20, it's like, okay, we're going to find something here.
Yeah.
If you're only creating 10, it's like, oh, we can't waste one of these. And it feels like at times they're
tight,
too precise.
Trying to be a little,
They're looking for the perfect one.
Yeah.
Instead of letting a shot go from 20 yards. You know, if it's on, have it. instead of trying to get it to a 10-yard shot.
That's a great point.
You know, like, look, at times, just have that shot. And I think, again, it comes back to you're a good defending team with your attackers. Saba Lobjanidze runs all over the place. Shaundé Silva is good defensively. Daniel Rios, good defensively. If you play those three central midfielders, they can push up. You can then pin teams in, but you got to finish chances. You got to finish plays, because if you get into the attacking third and you don't get a shot, you don't put the ball out for a goal kick, you don't force a save, you don't get that shot off, the ball turns over, you're more exposed. You've got to take whatever chances you get, even if it's a low percentage chance.
When you look at the table, Jason, I see two things that stick out to me that are good news. One, goal differential is only -2.
Yep.
That is a very fixable thing. Two, they are two wins away from being not only back into a playoff position, but towards the middle of the table. How does Rob Valentino convey that message of positivity?
I think the players feel it. I mean, just being around this team all year long, but over these past few weeks where it has been a lot of travel, it has been a lot of wear and tear, you've had, you know, red cards and guys going away on international duty and things that could drive you crazy and frustrate you. This group generally has been pretty level-headed. It's been interesting to watch because you see teams that are maybe losing more games than they're accustomed to with that, and you can, when you're around the players, you can kind of feel that pressure. I don't get that sense, and it's from a good perspective. It's not from a they don't care. It's from a they get it. They're handling it. They know. They look at that table, and you win two games in a row, you're in a very different spot. And I think they're capable of that. You just have to find those simple things and get back to the simplistic elements, the building blocks of the game. Be difficult to break down. Make teams play to the outside rather than play down the middle. And when you get looks at goal, even just decent looks at goal, take it.
Take it.
Atlanta United commits grand theft!
Back to Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Tonight, it's Atlanta United versus New York City.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is Dukes and Bell. Chris in for Mike today. Glad to have you listening. We're down here live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Our buddy Jason Longshore, analyst for Atlanta United, joining us here as we overlook the pitch, and good to see you, Jason, as always.
Wait.
What's up, man?
Whoa, what?
You didn't say long shoe on the Twitter.
Oh, my
Come
bad.
Come on, Carl. You got to deliver your line.
My bad. I forgot. I'm sorry.
Carl.
Yes, it is Jason. It is long shoe, at long shoe on the Twitter. Hey, first and foremost, man, we were talking about this before we get into the details of not only tonight, but the team. I said this because I've known Jason a long time. I was like, bro, you're a little winded, man. And you were like, yeah, this schedule, right? Let's talk about this.
I mean, I was going through it with some of the other guys on soccer down here this morning. This team in the last 3 weeks to a month has had like three normal practice sessions. So I can't even imagine like the player side of it, what they're dealing with all of the work that they put in. Just for Mike and I, just the travel and the amount of games that we've been doing lately. Throw in, you know, doing Copa America and covering that and doing Atlanta Soccer Tonight shows. I don't even know what a normal week's like anymore.
It's a lot.
It's all over the map, and it hasn't even just been a lot of work. It's been the travel to Utah. It's been the travel to St. Louis. It's been the travel to Montreal. It's been the travel to Foxborough, which might not seem like a long trip, but you got to fly into Boston or Providence and then be on a bus for an hour. Like, it's been a lot. So, yeah, I'm a little winded.
I get it. And I think Atlanta United fans and 17s are a little winded with how things have gone so far.
Yeah.
I said to you when you walked up, I said, I just hope we can turn things around. And your response to me was, which gets us into what they may do, we got to get some players.
Yeah.
How do we fill the void? What do you think happens? And where are we at right now?
I mean, you're missing a 10 and a 9 right now. And those are, from an attacking perspective, your two most important guys. And you're missing those. So you've got to go out and get talented players in those two positions. I do want to give Daniel Rios a ton of credit. And Jamal Traoré, but Rios has played a lot more lately.
Okay.
Rios has overproduced for being the third forward in the door that you brought in after the season had already started due to other injuries. Guys scoring goals and guys also creating goals. Full credit to Daniel Rios. Full credit to TRA. Hopefully you don't have to have a sneaky goal at the end to get something out of tonight. But he's found ways to contribute. Where you're really missing things right now is that playmaker. Because you can look at the quality of chances that has dropped off after Thiago Almada's transfer. And look, you don't have another Thiago Almada on your roster. Nobody has a second world-class player in a case that you break glass in case of emergency. You just don't have that. So you've got to upgrade in that position right now because you're missing those kinds of chances being created. You got to find other ways. You got to find a scheme that works. You got to find some tactics that work. I think they've hit on a few different things. For me, it's about the pressure in the attacking half when you don't have the ball. Turn them over. That kind of high press, not in the Red Bulls Philadelphia sense where you don't want the ball. Right. This team wants the ball. But when you lose it, if you build up your attacks properly and, you know, the three of us are passing the ball together and then it turns over, well, there's going to be one guy on the opponent and there's three of us to try to win it back. Those are the moments in this run of games that has been difficult where I think Atlanta's looked good and they've created opportunities. You turn it over, that happens. Win the ball back immediately and then go. And I think they can do that. And I think tonight, against an opponent, that they can do that against.
There's been a compounding issue, Jason, unfortunately, is that in between trying to find the new DPs to come in, there's been a couple of lopsided results. And with that comes more and more pressure, as you're just describing how to get the offense back online, on the defense. So what can you do on the defensive side in order to try to mitigate those lopsided results?
Well, it's been one lopsided result, the RSL game. And it was three dead ball goals that you give up, three set-piece goals that you can't give up. That, if you want an immediate thing, don't give those up. Because that game is much more – you take those away, it's 2-2. You look at that first half, and I think it's one of the best first halves that the team's played under Rob Valentino. It was a really good first half. Even with conceding in the first minute, you came back and you controlled the play. You dictated the way that the game went because you were very hard to play through down the middle. So you can't give up – I don't want to say a dead ball goal is a cheap goal or a set-piece goal is a cheap goal, but you can't give up those moments. You can't give up those kinds of goals. In the run of play, they've been pretty good. The problem is right now, because your offensive output is not where it needs to be, you have to be not just pretty good. You have to be basically perfect at times. And they've – I don't think that's fair to ask. I think the ask needs to be the other side. Control the ball more, play in the attacking half more, and whether you're on the ball or you're disrupting the other team's buildup and forcing them to give it up, that's where you need to have the game played. It can't be like the first half in Montreal where they pinned you in. I don't think Atlanta wanted to sit back in that game. Montreal, really clever things tactically. They got a lot of numbers forward. They pinned Atlanta in, and Atlanta couldn't play out of it.
Jason Longshore joining us here live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium as we get ready. Pre-game tonight, 6:30. Abe and Garrett will have that for you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, of course, Jason along with Mike Conte will have the call. As we talk about tonight, what's the strategy? What do you do tonight against NYCFC?
Well, there's a couple questions to it. I mean, one, NYC is a very good defensive team, so your chances are probably going to be a little bit at a premium. But two, you're missing Steon Gregerson, and you're missing Noah Kopp because he's away with the USU 20s. So you start to look at that center back depth chart, and you have Luis Abram, you have Derek Williams, you have Efrain Morales, and that's it. You have Matt Edwards, who is a bit of a utility defender. He can play as a fullback, he can play as a wingback, he can play as a center back, but he hasn't played as a center back in this building for the first team yet.
Okay.
He's got first team minutes in the Open Cup, he's got second team minutes at center back, not at the first team level. So that's a big ask if he's your only center back on the bench. We've seen them play three center backs lately. Do they go back to a line of four just because you want to have one extra guy on the bench? If you do that, then you're looking at your central midfield room where you've got four guys, and Dax McCarty, Jay Fortune, Bartosz Szlich, Tristan Muyamba, maybe that's where you've got depth. Three of them, two center backs, you've got your stable base to build around. And I think you have to get that part first, whichever one you feel the most stable with. Three center backs or two, three central midfielders or two. Nail that down. Second, you've got to take more half chances. I think the thing that's difficult when you're not creating a lot of chances, sometimes you look for the perfect chance. You know, if you know you're only going to create 10, instead of 20. Let's just throw round numbers at it. You were creating 20 before. Now you're going to create 10. You don't want to waste those 10. You feel like if you create 20, it's like, okay, we're going to find something here.
Yeah.
If you're only creating 10, it's like, oh, we can't waste one of these. And it feels like at times they're too precise.
Trying to be a little,
They're looking for the perfect one.
Yeah.
Instead of letting a shot go from 20 yards. You know, if it's on, have it. Instead of trying to get it to a 10-yard shot.
That's a great point.
You know, like, look, at times, just have that shot. And I think, again, it comes back to you're a good defending team with your attackers. Sabalop Janidze runs all over the place. Shaunde Silva is good defensively. Daniel Rios, good defensively. If you play those three central midfielders, they can push up. You can then pin teams in, but you got to finish chances. You got to finish plays, because if you get into the attacking third and you don't get a shot, you don't put the ball out for a goal kick, you don't force a save, you don't get that shot off, the ball turns over, you're more exposed. You've got to take whatever chances you get, even if it's a low percentage chance.
When you look at the table, Jason, I see two things that stick out to me that are good news. One, goal differential is only -2.
Yep.
That is a very fixable thing. Two, they are two wins away from being not only back into a playoff position, but towards the middle of the table. How does Rob Valentino convey that message of positivity?
I think the players feel it. I mean, just being around this team all year long, but over these past few weeks where it has been a lot of travel, it has been a lot of wear and tear, you've had, you know, red cards and guys going away on international duty and things that could drive you crazy and frustrate you, this group generally has been pretty level-headed. It's been interesting to watch because you see teams that are maybe losing more games than they're accustomed to with that, and you can, when you're around the players, you can kind of feel that pressure. I don't get that sense, and it's from a good perspective. It's not from a they don't care. It's from a they get it. They're handling it. They know. They look at that table, and you win two games in a row, you're in a very different spot. And I think they're capable of that. You just have to find those simple things and get back to the simplistic elements, the building blocks of the game. Be difficult to break down. Make teams play to the outside rather than play down the middle. And when you get looks at goal, even just decent looks at goal, take it.
Take it. Take the shot. It's Dukes and Bell. Here's the deal before we let you go. What is the men's national team going? What are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Oh, there's a lot of talk about this, and you're going to see so many different rumors. You think Atlanta United's rumor mill is going to be ridiculous over the next month? The U.S. men's national team rumor mill, I've seen U.S.-based coaches. I've seen Jurgen Klopp mentioned when he had no interest in taking a job right now. Maurizio Pochettino interest. I've seen people yelling about Gareth Southgate potentially being interested or being a candidate. Look, Gareth Southgate would be the most successful manager pedigree-wise walking in the door that U.S. soccer has ever had. He's been to back-to-back Euro finals. He's been to a World Cup semifinal. Jurgen Klinsmann's resume had nothing on what Southgate could get you. If he's interested, you drop everything and you go talk to him.
Yeah.
He's coming off of a great run with the England national team. You've got to, in my opinion, get somebody who has won with a national team. I love Maurizio Pochettino, who's another name who's come up today. I love what he thinks in terms of soccer. I love his style of play. He's never managed a national team. It's a completely different job.
It is a different animal.
It is very, very different. If Southgate's interested, do it. The one that I have said so many times and he's interested or he's being linked to the job in Nigeria right now is Harvey Renard. He managed Saudi Arabia at the last World Cup. He is managing the French women's national team at the Olympics. He said he's stepping down from that job after this. He has been the manager that has taken good teams and had them punch above their weight.
Mm.
That's what the U.S. is. We can like it or not. We talked about it over the weekend, Chris. Like,
yep.
I think there's an expectation that with the U.S., it would be like if you're an NC State fan and you're expecting them to beat Alabama 9 times out of 10.
Not happening.
Not happening.
Yeah.
That's 20 versus, you know, 5. That's kind of what the U.S. is in. We're 20. Okay. Find somebody who can be scrappy and win those games that maybe they shouldn't win. That would be the guy to hire. I think Renard would be a great candidate.
We're going to keep an eye on it. It is a big decision, and we're all watching with the 2026 World Cup approaching, and it's going to be here. As our city will be a part of it. Jason, man, have a great call tonight. Looking forward to see what they do, and hopefully we add these players sooner than later, man.
Let's find some 3 points tonight, guys.
That's all
vamos.
We need to do.
Vamos.
Jason Longshore at Longshoe. On Twitter. All right, we're coming back. 6 o'clock hour straight ahead. We'll get you caught up on the latest headlines and what's going on. Also, what went down at SEC Media Days today. And what did you think of the All-Star game last night? We'll talk about it. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. Yeah.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.